From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, there's a controversial proposal to let charter school teachers have fewer qualifications than public school teachers. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a potential ethics investigation into Western New York Republican Congressman Chris Collins. And a new coalition launches an effort to gather information from people affected by PFOA water contamination. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The State University of New York board members overseeing charter schools are in the midst of a public comment period on whether charter school teachers should be allowed to have fewer qualifications than public school teachers. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the proposal is controversial.
Under the proposal, charter schools that have already demonstrated strong academic performance would be able to set their own qualifications for teachers, with one proposal requiring a bachelor's degree and just 30 hours of classroom instruction in order to begin teaching students. Public school teachers are required to eventually obtain a master's degree and undergo a lengthy certification process that includes exams and a full semester of student teaching. Andy Pallotta, the president of the teachers' union, New York State United Teachers, says he is completely against the proposal.
Why would you have someone who only needs 30 hours of instructional time with students to become a teacher in one circumstance, say a charter school network, and in a traditional public school, there are tremendous, tremendous requirements for teachers.
Proponents, including the chair of SUNY's Charter School Committee, Joseph Bellick, says the charter schools have struggled to hire enough teachers. There's a statewide teacher shortage. At a contentious July meeting of the committee, Bellick said there are thousands of students on waiting lists for charter schools because their parents want them to attend.
The parents of these kids do not care about the politics of this issue. They don't care about the teachers' union. They don't care about politicians. They want the best education for their kids, and they're going to put them in the schools that they think are the best schools for them.
Two people spoke at the committee meeting, including Maria Batista with the pro-school funding group Alliance for Quality Education. She accused the committee of proposing a racist policy, saying minority children disproportionately attend charter schools, and they would be the ones with the less qualified teachers.
We know that they're going to disproportionately impact black and brown children. You would never have uncertified teacher children. Why is it okay for black and brown children? Why is that okay?
Okay.
It is not okay.
Batista, whose group received some funding from the teachers' union, also criticized the timing of the meeting, saying it was announced one day before the July 4th holiday and held 2 days later, with little time for parents to find out about it. Bellick answered that parents of charter school students will be given every opportunity to offer input, and he accused the group of smearing his character in Twitter posts.
When I look at my phone and someone tweets the following, at Joe Bellick is willing to allow this racist policy to persist.
That's right.
I take umbrage at it.
Because you okay? are. You're the chair.
I take umbrage at it.
You're the chair, and you're allowing it to proceed.
The executive director of AQE, Billy Easton, says the Twitter post did not accuse any individual of racism, but called the proposed policy racist. Bellick has used his own Twitter handle in recent days to dog the state education department over the results of 3rd through 8th grade English and math test scores. They showed charter school students performing slightly better than their public school counterparts. He accuses the education commissioner and state board of regents chancellor of not wanting charter schools to succeed, and he tweeted that they should take their blinders off. Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia has expressed reservations about lesser requirements for charter school teachers, saying it's a cause for concern. A member of the SUNY Charter School Committee also voiced doubts. Eric Korngold says he's not convinced that there is a need for the changes and says he worries about the consequences of the proposal.
I'm very concerned about the creation of, as you say, two tiers of teachers.
Korngold says he thinks charter schools have been successful because of the quality of the teachers and their training. Members of the public have until September 9th to weigh in on the proposal. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week you sat down with J.P. Miller. He's the publisher of the Empire Report New York. It's an aggregator online. It presents the headlines in New York State government and politics each week. The top story on the report was the investigation into Congressman Chris Collins of Western New York, a Republican, of course. Many will remember he and John Faso, Republican from the 19th District, had the Faso-Collins Amendment when it came to the American Health Care Act presented by the Trump administration, and has been getting some response to that since, I'll put it in those terms. And now we see an investigation into Collins, among other things, into, it looks like, ethics surrounding insider trading.
That's right. Look, when you are in a position to take on a sitting governor of New York, especially a sitting governor like Andrew Cuomo, as well as every other Democrat in New York, you are putting yourself into a situation where people are going to be looking at you. I have no doubt about it. I'm not saying the governor did it, but I'm saying that people will be looking at you. In the terms of the reports that I've been reading in the journals, it looks to me as if Collins may have violated the insider trading laws as a congressman. And, you know, insider trading is always very, very difficult to prove. But it can't help him that these news reports are coming out, and who knows whether he'll be challenged and get an effective challenge. I know Andrew Cuomo has certainly declared war on him. So when you put it all together, this is fascinating stuff. It may cost Collins that seat. Now, David, this isn't the only investigation that's going on. I read in the paper recently that Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General of New York, has an interesting relationship with Bob Mueller, who is the special counsel. Schneiderman, in doing investigations of potential wrongdoing by people like Paul Manafort in the Trump administration when he was there, and we know the feds are looking at that. But what's fascinating is that the federal government, if Manafort did something that's violative, he can be pardoned by the president. That's why the president goes around saying he's a good guy, you know, even though they let him go, you know, or he was sort of forced out or whatever in the beginning. I'm telling you now that if Eric, the thinking is that if Schneiderman indicts him for a state crime or goes after him for a state crime, the president's pardon apparently does not work on state crimes, only on federal crimes. So if the indictment comes from New York State or an indictment comes from New York State, Eric Schneiderman, who has never been successful in being a top name in the state, will all of a sudden become one of the most talked about guys that you could possibly name. So I'm saying that's a big one to keep an eye on, because as we have always kidded around and said, AG, Attorney General, stands really for almost governor, because we have a habit of making our attorney generals governor. This could go a long way to making Eric Schneiderman.
Over the weekend, the new Mario Cuomo Bridge, at least one lane of it, opened, going in one direction. The governor was there in a yellow Corvette to mark it. We're also hearing some criticism for the naming of that bridge.
Well, it's the son naming it for his father. As you know, I have great love for Mario Cuomo, so I'm not going to say anything bad about naming the bridge, but I'm telling you now, there are those people who think that it isn't right, that it's just too close to home. In addition, there's a huge debate going on about thruway tolls and who's going to pay. So does somebody in Niagara County pay for the new bridge? Cuomo says, no, it's not going to happen. But he's not quite clear on what is going to happen, how the thruway is going to afford this several billion dollar bridge. and how it's going to work. Look, you have to have money to pay the bills. And, you know, there are many people who think that the governor hasn't really thought this thing through.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A coalition of people with backgrounds in public health, policy, and research have launched a new effort to gather information from residents of communities affected by water contaminated with the chemical PFOA. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports the group is seeking input from residents across state lines.
PFOA, an odorless, tasteless chemical used in making nonstick and insulating materials, has been detected in a handful of Northeast communities over the last few years. What began with one resident testing his own water in the summer of 2014 has evolved into multi-million dollar remediation efforts in Hoosick Falls and Petersburg in Rensselaer County, New York, and nearby Bennington and North Bennington, Vermont. As environmental and public health officials in both states negotiate with the companies accused of polluting the water supplies and conduct their own assessments, a group of advocates is stepping forward to get answers. Former U.S. EPA Region 2 Administrator Judith Enck, a Rensselaer County resident and part of a new coalition, says a survey will be made available to residents of the affected communities, past and present. And she said it's looking for more information on health effects associated with PFOA following a 2012 study done in Ohio and West Virginia.
And that gold-plated multi-million dollar study found probable links with six diseases. And so those are the six specific diseases that we will be asking both past and current residents of these communities to self-report as part of this questionnaire.
Among health effects linked to PFOA are various forms of cancers, thyroid disease, and hypertension during pregnancy. Enck, who served under President Obama and is now a regular commentator on WAMC, warned Hoosick Falls residents in late 2015 to not drink or cook with municipal water. Since then, New York State expanded investigations of PFC contaminations from Hoosick Falls to nearby Petersburg and Newburgh in Orange County. Vermont began investigating pollution in the Bennington area. David Bond has led research into PFOA contamination at Bennington College.
Both New York and Vermont are beginning to move forward with remediation plans. Most houses and public water systems that were impacted now have filtration systems. There's a lot moving forward. A lot of great work is being done. But a number of residents in both Vermont and New York still have difficult questions.
Bond and Bennington students have already sought and researched questions submitted by neighbors, but there are plenty of unknowns. The communities still don't have an idea of exactly how long residents have been exposed.
In the end, we hope that the data we'll gather through consulting with the communities will do two things. It will offer new clarity around emerging community health concerns, and it will also give local knowledge of community health greater prominence in broader discussions.
Bennington College brought together people from New York and Vermont to share their experiences with contamination during a PFOA conference earlier this year. Dr. Howard Freed, a former director of the New York Department of Health's Center for Environmental Health, pointed out that New York, Vermont, and the federal government all have their own health advisory levels for PFOA in drinking water. Freed said it's important to pay attention to how other states are approaching PFC pollution.
By engaging with other states, there are other ways to approach the problem, and we don't have a monopoly on all the good ideas here in New York.
New York State has conducted a review of the state cancer registry for current Hoosick Falls residents, but did not find significant evidence of higher cancer rates associated with PFOA exposure. Some residents took issue with the fact that the state's assessment did not extend to people who have moved away. The results of the new questionnaire will be shared with all.
The information that we have and the work that we've done is all going to be public record. It's all going to be transparent.
Paper copies will be made available at public libraries in Hoosick Falls, Petersburg, and Bennington. It will also be posted online at Bennington College's Understanding PFOA webpage. For more reporting on PFOA contamination in the Northeast, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The nine Mid-Atlantic and New England states that participate in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative have agreed to a draft proposal that will further reduce power plant carbon emissions under the Regional Environmental Pact. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGGI, caps power plant carbon dioxide emissions. Regulated power plants must have allowances for each ton of emissions, which are traded in quarterly auctions. Environmental Advocates of New York spokesman Travis Prue says REGGI has shown since 2009 that a cap-and-trade system works.
The way REGGI works is it sets a cap on allowable pollution. Polluters then essentially have to pay for the right to meet that cap. That money is then intentionally reinvested back into the development of clean energy technologies as well as energy efficiency projects across the state. Since 2009, hundreds of millions of dollars that otherwise wouldn't have been available have gone into virtually every single community in the state.
The nine participating states have agreed to reduce the cap on emissions by an additional 30% below 2020 levels by 2030. The Adirondack Council participates in the REGGI auctions, buying the allowances to permanently retire them. Council spokesman John Sheehan says the proposed changes will mean the cost of allowances will rise a little bit.
It'll cause the power industry to work a little harder to reduce its emissions so it can avoid paying for allowances by reducing the number that they need. As you know, every time they put a ton of carbon out their smokestack, they've got to buy one of these to account for that. And there is a finite number. So once they're gone, and they can't put more carbon out. So they have to find ways to economize in what's coming out of the smokestack.
The program changes include the addition of an emissions containment reserve, which allows states to withhold allowances from auction if emission reduction costs are lower than projections. REGGI indicates the move is a way to adapt to supply and demand. Prue calls the proposal a good move.
The way the program was working is there was this additional number of pollution credits that were available, and what happened is oftentimes, unintentionally, by the people who actually created the program, polluters were stockpiling these credits. And so they were essentially creating their own little loophole around actually reducing the emissions cap. And what this is going to do is right-size the program, put everything back on track, and make sure that we are having an annual and pure ratchet down of the amount of carbon pollution being spewed into the air we breathe.
There are also modifications to the trigger price for allowances. Prue says that move is needed because the pricing has been volatile in recent years.
The whole goal with REGGI is to make the industry more efficient. Well, then what happens is the industry gets efficient, so therefore there are more credits that are needed. So again, this right sizes the number of credits that are available. There's a much more standard pricing program. So states have a more reliable idea of what is going to actually be raised and what they're going to have to be able to invest back into clean energy and energy efficiency.
The states participating in REGGI are New York, Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie pulled his state out of the pact in 2011, although it is expected to rejoin after the 2018 gubernatorial elections. Virginia is also considering joining the initiative. A stakeholders' meeting to review the proposed changes will be held September 25th in Maryland.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government. Politics. I'm David Gustina. Many communities across New York State have bike trails for people to use when traveling throughout their community, including trails that link multiple communities. The Albany Hudson Electric Trail is no different. It's a proposed 35-mile bicycling and pedestrian rail trail path running from the city of Rensselaer to the city of Hudson. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports that officials there hope to have the trail operational by 2020.
The Albany-Hudson Electric Trail is a proposed 35-mile bicycling and pedestrian rail trail path running from the city of Rensselaer to the city of Hudson. Officials hope to have the trail operational by 2020. The Albany-Hudson Electric Trail would incorporate the old Albany-Hudson Electric trolley line into the larger Empire State Trail project. The goal is to complete the walking cycling trail network from Manhattan to Buffalo by 2020. The project is in design phase, with public informational meetings being held over the next 2 months regarding the draft plan. New York State Parks spokesman Randy Simons.
The public comment period will really continue for the next year as we conduct the design phase. The plans right now is we'll put the bid out for the project in the fall of 2018. We expect to start construction in the spring of 2019.
The trolley operated between Albany and Hudson from 1899 to 1929. Today, the land is owned by National Grid and used for electrical transmission lines. The utility has agreed to let the state restore the trail.
The state, we've already committed to paying the full $35 to $40 million of construction costs for this 35-mile section of the Albany-Hudson Electric Trail.
The trail would be between 10 to 12 feet wide, paved with asphalt in more developed sections, surfaced with stone dust in areas of lower use. The proposed pathway runs through Rensselaer County, the city of Rensselaer, and towns of East Greenbush, Scodac, and Nassau, and Columbia County, the towns of Chatham, Kinderhook, Stuyvesant, Stockport, and Greenport, along with the villages of Valencia and Kinderhook. A bridge in Albany is not yet part of the trail initiative, but the Livingston Avenue Bridge Coalition's Martin Daly says it could and should be a key connection.
There's so much happening both in the Albany Warehouse District and with the improvements at the Corning Preserve Trail that we'd really be remiss if we didn't make those physical connections that would support those economic development initiatives in both Albany and Rensselaer with their waterfront development. And the Livingston Avenue Bridge provides a remarkable opportunity. The bridge is over 100 years old, and it's due to be reconstructed or rebuilt, and the current incarnation has a walkway on it. And so if the bridge is reconstructed or rebuilt, the coalition is advocating for the replacement or inclusion of a walkway on a new structure.
Amtrak uses the bridge, considered to be a critical component of a future high-speed rail system. The New York State DOT and Federal Railroad Administration are examining the structure to see whether the best option would be rehabilitation or replacement. There's more information, including a link to the Albany-Hudson Electric Trail website at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Program number 1735. Or just listen on the web at WAMC.org or podcast at WAMCpodcast.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.